Hello, I'm Pastor Rod Holler of the Cape Baptist Church in Cape Coral, Florida. I hope this message will be a blessing to you. Thanks for listening.
Ecclesiastes. This book is actually written from a man who was frustrated, but finally found truth. And I guess you could look at this book as a series of dead ends. I'm going to try this. And you get to the very end, you succeed getting there, and it's empty. And you try something else, and you try something else, and you try something else, and all is empty. So it is we are studying Solomon, who has pursued the very things that people are even pursuing today. There is nothing new under the sun. And you consider what Solomon pursued several thousand years ago. Physical pleasure, wine, laughter and entertainment, building and landscaping projects, servants, possessions, livestock, gaining wealth, silver and gold. We also saw he checked into collectibles. Don't we do this today? There is nothing new under the sun. We happen to have MP3 players. They had an orchestra. It's still pursuing music. And so it is, the conclusion is vanity and vexation of spirit. Take a look at Ecclesiastes chapter 2, verse 9. So I was great and increased more than all that were before me in Jerusalem. Also my wisdom remained in me. And we likened that in our last study. How many times do Christians know better? They have the wisdom. God's on the throne. They have the wisdom that Jesus Christ paid their sin debt, and they still pursue the things of the world. Verse 10, whatsoever mine eyes desired, I kept not from them. I withheld not my heart from any joy. For my heart rejoiced in all my labor, and this was my portion of all my labor. Then I looked. He rejoiced for a brief time, and he says in verse 11, then I looked on all the works that my hands had wrought, and on the labor that I had labored to do, and behold, all was vanity and vexation of spirit, and there was no profit under the sun. A very unusual book in light of other scripture, because it is written from man's point of view and the worldly pursuits of pleasure, satisfaction, and fulfillment. Written from a man who tried and tried and tried. And he is crying out, learn from me, don't waste your time. Three great divisions in this book is life without God is meaningless. And then Solomon talks about the efforts and thoughts he had trying to find meaning and purpose, and then his conclusions. Three very broad categories, but that sums up this book very well. Well, tonight, let's take a look at Ecclesiastes chapter 2, verse 12 through 18. And I turn myself to behold wisdom and madness and folly. For what can the man do that cometh after the king, even that which hath been already done? Then I saw that wisdom excels folly, as far as light excelleth darkness. The wise man's eyes are in his head, but the fool walketh in darkness. And I myself perceived also that one event happeneth to them all. Then said I in my heart, as it happeneth to the fool, so it happeneth even to me. And why was I then more wise? Then I said in my heart, this is also vanity. Verse 16, for there is no remembrance of the wise more than of the fool forever. Seeing that which now is in the days to come shall all be forgotten. How dieth the wise man? As the fool. Therefore I hated life, because the work that is wrought under the sun is grievous unto me. For all is vanity and vexation of spirit. Yea, I hated all my labor, which I had taken under the sun, because I should leave it unto the man that shall be after me. And if you remember, we looked at some glimpses from the book of 1 Kings, all of these incredible things that Solomon did. And what is he crying out? It's all vanity and vexation of spirit. What's the point? What is the point? Well, we're going to consider tonight, earthly wisdom is far greater than folly, the grand reality of death, and again, He concludes, vanity of vanity, all is vanity and vexation of spirit. You see, the key to this book is there's nothing wrong with pursuing some of these things, but when it's without God, is God in it? Is God driving you to do this or this? Certainly God had him build the temple. But God had to remind him in the middle of building that thing, is, you know, Solomon, if you don't walk right before me, this is all in vain. In vexation of spirit, I want the inner man. I don't want the works of your hands per se. Solomon has experienced everything and all was vanity. Consider verse 12. Ecclesiastes 2, And I, Solomon, turned myself to behold wisdom and madness and folly. That's an interesting mix, isn't it? All right, I'm going to try now this, this, and this. And they don't even seem to fit together. They're actually extremes. And to behold wisdom, madness, and folly, what can the man do that cometh after the king? Even that which hath been already done. In other words, I have done the research. My study was so complete, nobody is going to come after me and say, well, I'm going to do this study and find truth in all this and happiness. And he's saying, no, you don't. I had the resources that no other man had. More wealth, power, and whatever I snapped my fingers to, I got. Servants, ships, you name it, he had it. And he threw all of his resources into this search. And he says, what can the man do it that cometh after the king? Nobody's going to do a more complete search than I have. Even that which has already been done. Take a look again at Ecclesiastes 1:9. The thing that hath been, it is that which shall be. That which is done is that which shall be. There is no new thing under the sun. Mankind has the same base lusts and desires of the flesh from generation to generation. Yes, technology might change, but fundamentally, people are people. Sin is sin. Temptation is temptation. It isn't going to change, and it hasn't changed. Quote, a future investigator can strike nothing out new so as to draw a different conclusion from what Solomon drew by comparing wisdom and madness. What man can come after the king and things which are done? None ever can have the same means of testing what all earthly things can do toward satisfying the soul, namely, worldly wisdom, science, riches, power, longevity, all combined. He has researched it, and it comes up empty. Nobody else is going to do a more complete search. The truth is, all we have to do, though, is look around at this world and what people flock to. They're still searching for meaning and satisfaction. And the party comes up empty. Solomon is crying out for everyone to listen and learn. I have done it, been there, done that. Don't waste your time. Yet how many people fail to hear? Proverbs, my son, heed the words. Christ, he that has ears to hear, let him hear. Years ago, I had my ears checked. And the doctor made an interesting point. He said, did you know you don't hear with your ears? You hear with your brain. Sound is falling on your ears, but are you really hearing it? Do you get it? Is it sinking in? So it is. Then I saw that wisdom excelleth folly, verse 13. As far as the light excelleth darkness. Now, we have to understand when this is talking about wisdom here, it's written from the vantage point of worldly wisdom, not scriptural wisdom. It's without God. Quote, the worldly wise man has good sense in managing his affairs, skill and taste in building and planting, and keeps within safe and respectable bounds in pleasure, while the fool is wanting in these respects. Darkness, equivalent to fatal error, blind infatuation, yet one event, death, happens to all. In other words, that we could say the worldly wise man, oh, is he moral on earthly standards? And he is a successful businessman, or whatever he puts his hand to. And then we have got the fool who returns to his vomit. And they both die, what's the point? As far as light excelleth darkness, here's a comparison of wisdom with folly, light and darkness. It is interesting that he says wisdom, worldly wisdom, does excel folly. It is better to at least live next door to a guy who's unsaved that's at least successful in worldly wisdom, as opposed to the drunk. You don't know what's going to happen next door. But either one, they're both on a dead-end path. We must realize, just because so-and-so's a great, good old buddy, if he's not saved, did you know the wrath of God is abiding on him till he gets saved? Morality is not the issue. That's why the end of the story here is not worldly wisdom. It's spirituality. It is better when you compare the two, but when you compare it to righteousness, it's nothing. Both of them are the same thing. The end of the story is they're going to die. Then what? Well, this is what the conclusion obviously is going to be one day. The grand reality of death. It is the great equalizer. Like the game of Monopoly, all the pieces eventually go back in the box. That's how life is. How much did he leave when he died? All of it. And that's what we will all say. We will all leave everything behind, that which we cherished, things that we had for necessities of life. It will all be left behind. They'll have an estate sale. That's it. We're done. It's been likened to take a bucket of water, stick your hand in it, take your hand out, and the hole is the impact you've left on this world. They're not going to miss us, folks. There has yet to be a person die and the world stopped. The wise and the foolish all die. Ecclesiastes 2:14, the wise man's eyes are in his head, but the fool walks in darkness. I myself perceived that one event happeneth to them all. He is really reflecting on life. Quote, the wise man's eyes are in his head. I've heard my parents and school teachers say to me, use your mind, use your head, use your eyes. That is what Solomon is saying. A wise man uses his head and his eyes, but the fool walks in darkness. Can I paraphrase it? Think. Continuing to quote, I myself perceived also that one event happeneth to them all. Regardless of how smart you are, you don't really get too far away from the fool because you're both going to be carried out feet forward and laid to rest somewhere. You both will end up the same way. Think. But how many people fail to truly think? Packages of cigarettes have written on them that these cause cancer, and sales are still booming. You have to wonder what they're thinking. I understand it's a very difficult habit to give up. Think. Ecclesiastes 2:15, then I said in my heart, as it happeneth to the fool, so it happeneth even to me. I'm going to die. And here I am with all the wonder of the world at my fingers. Why was I then more wise? Okay, I've got this earthly wisdom, money, all things. I said in my heart, in his thinking, that this also is vanity. But there is no remembrance of the wise more than of the fool forever. Seeing that which now is the days to come shall all be forgotten. And how dieth the wise man as the fool? What's the point to life on earth? All roads without God lead to despair. That's true. All roads without God lead to despair. Imagine you're on vacation. You want to do some fishing. So you're standing at the dock. You've got your equipment there. You're ready to load your boat. And you see a couple boats coming in. And some of the boats have Nothing. And one of the boats has a stringer full of fish. What do? You look at the guy that's got a stringer full of fish and you say, where did you go and what did you use? Why? Because I don't want to waste my time. I'm only on vacation for a brief time here and I want to catch some fish. Now, you might look at some of the boats where the guys are coming up with stories of how they got away, I'm sure, and you're saying, where did you go? Because I don't want to do that. And what did you use? Because I don't want to use that. We want to be successful. We ought to look at successful in life, and this is what Solomon is crying out. Maybe I'm going to date myself on this one, but do you remember Horatio Alger stories? The little boy that makes good and becomes a, you know, he works hard from low levels of strata. I'm dating myself, obviously. Up into riches. And they were books of many, many years ago that were encouraging boys and girls to read and learn the ethics of hard work, from rags to riches. Well, let me give you a similar story, riches to rags. You ever hear of Huntington Hartford? His father and uncles privately owned the A&P supermarket chain, which at one point had 16,000 stores in the United States and was the largest retail empire in the world. In the 50s, it was the largest grocery chain. It was next to General Motors. It sold more goods than any other company in the world. In 1950, it was estimated to be at $2.7 billion in sales. Well, Huntington Hartford, his father died in 1922. He went on to Harvard University. After graduation, he went to work for the family company. He worked in the statistical department. And he lived on a trust fund that generated $1.5 million per year. That was a long time ago, and that's a lot of money. But his wealth kept accumulating. 1936, he purchased a sailing ship. He converted it into a private yacht. 1940, he invested $100,000 to start up a newspaper. He became an avid sailor, and then he donated his yacht to the Coast Guard for World War II. After World War II, he moved to Los Angeles, purchased some movie studios. In 1950s, he purchased a penthouse in New York City. He owned a home in Palm Beach. He owned a 150-acre estate in Mawell, New Jersey. He had a 160-acre estate in Hollywood. He had a home in France, and he had a house on the Paradise Island in the Bahamas. In 1955, he founded the Oil Shale Corporation. He set up a Denver Research Institute at the University of Denver to find alternate methods of oil extraction. 1957, his uncle died, and he inherited a vast portion of his estate. The Chicago Tribune estimated his wealth in 1969 as $500 million. 1959, he bought Hog Island in the Bahamas, renamed it to Paradise Island. I wonder why. He developed it over the next 3 years, hoping to turn it into another Monte Carlo. To support the art that he enjoyed, he built the Artist Colony in Rustic Canyon. He had Frank Lloyd Wright's son come to adapt the existing structures and design new ones. He opened a theater called the Huntington Hartford Theater, and for 10 years, it featured Broadway-scale productions. He owned an art collection. One of his paintings was a Rembrandt worth $33 million. You want the rest of the story? He was married 4 times, all ending in divorce. Huntington Hartford, heir to the A&P grocery store chain, lost his millions through failed enterprises and a lavish lifestyle. In 1940, the Hartfords were ranked among the country's richest families by the Securities and Exchange Commission. They declared bankruptcy years later, and he lived on his island till his death. Vanity of vanities, all is vanity. He tried, and he tried, and he tried, and it all came up empty. So it is that the rich and famous and poor, the unknown, all have one ending. We're going to die. Verse 17, therefore I hated life. I have tried and tried and tried. I have what the world wants. I have been there, done that. I hated life, because the work that is wrought under the sun is grievous unto me, for all is vanity and vexation of spirit. Here is the cry of a man who has succeeded in many things only to find it empty. Quote, we have been reminded before how fleeting is the remembrance of names of the mighty in their generation. To the mass there is often no remembrance of the wise more than the fool. Every new generation raises up a new race of rivals for renown. But after a short-lived day, that which is now, in the days to come, will be forgotten. Few comparatively survive the wreck of time. The preacher Solomon is seeking life apart from God. Folks, this world doesn't remember us. Can anybody tell me what time period Napoleon lived in? Can you? Napoleon who, right? I mean, we heard the name, but when did he live? Anybody know when Beethoven lived? Do you think they're going to remember us? Can anybody name all the presidents? I can't. Probably some kid in school, you know, come up, yeah, I can do that. The world isn't going to remember us. It's all vanity and vexation of spirit, all that I went through. No matter how hard and what Solomon tried, he found no satisfaction. And he is coming to the realization, what's the point? We're all going to drop dead. Folks, remember, this is the story of the kingdom of all time. It was promised to Abraham in Genesis 12. It was reiterated in Genesis 17 to Abraham and to his descendants. And it has gone to the house of David, a kingdom forever. And this is the story of it? How God is taking sinful people to populate his eternal kingdom? Do you get a grander picture of there is no righteousness in us? It's about Christ. And he has to pay our sin debt. It's not how warm and wonderful we are and the things of this earth. This is all going to pass. But there's one kingdom that's going to extend into eternity. This is what we must live for. I want you to consider Solomon's quest so far. We have considered in our study, Solomon tried worldly wisdom and knowledge. We read that in chapter 1 of Ecclesiastes. He continues it. Solomon then tried foolish pleasure in Ecclesiastes 2, 1 through 11. In chapter 2, verse 12, he compares them. I have done the research in worldly knowledge. I've done the study in folly. Guess what? Maybe it's a little better here on earth to be a worldly wise person than a fool, but they're all going to die. And so it is, Solomon says, I hate life. Have we never heard that? The sad truth of someone who's about to take their life or go get lost in a bottle of alcohol or go take some drugs. They've given up. Folks, the only answer is in the Bible, is in a relationship with God. That's it. You know, we can get so spoiled here in the United States because we have so much. You can see pictures of it, but you really do need to go sometime and see abject poverty. There are things and images burned in my brain in India, people in the streets laying there, they have nothing, hoping that somebody might give them some rice. I remember one particular man, it had to be tuberculosis, whatever the disease was, his knees were bending backwards, and all he could do was crawl like an animal. It was at a train station. I will never forget the three little boys when a gum was thrown on the ground. They picked it up and they passed it around chewing it because they'll never have it. Folks, it's easy in the United States to say, well, you know, we've got it made. God's with us. We've been blessed, but God can take his hands off us pretty quick. We better be thankful and use our blessings to his glory and honor. Remember, it's not how warm and wonderful we are. It's his mercy that he shed his grace on us. Now, one of the things here that's very important as we wrap this up, verse 18. Yea, I hated all my labor. Everything that I have done in this search, it makes me angry. I'm so frustrated. I hated all my labor which I had taken under the sun. Why? because I should leave it unto the man that shall be after me. Somebody is going to take our stuff one day. And they won't think about us. They'll think about the stuff. And they'll leave our stuff to somebody else. Quote, I have to go off and leave all of this someday. Have you ever stopped to think about that? What good is it going to do you? Oh, how many folk have worked all their lives to accumulate a little of this world's goods. Then they leave it to some godless relative. Some folk intend to leave it to a Christian organization so that their money can propagate the gospel after they're gone. But have you ever stopped to think how many Christian organizations have become apostate and have departed from the teaching of the Word of God? For example, John Harvard, who founded Harvard University, was a fundamental believer, and he left his money to propagate a fundamental Christian faith. Today, you wouldn't find much fundamental faith within 10 yards of Harvard. They have departed from the faith. The money which Mr. Harvard left has come to be used for the very opposite of what he intended. Did you know that Harvard was a Bible college when it started? It really was. People today leave money to so-called Christian organizations, but they have no assurance that the organization will remain true to the faith. We know that Solomon faced this same kind of problem because 1 Kings chapter 12 tells us so. What happened? He left the kingdom to his son, and it was his son's foolish arrogance that divided the kingdom. What a tragedy that was. Take a look at it. 1 Kings 11:43, Solomon slept with his fathers. He was dead. And was buried in the city of David his father, and Rehoboam his son reigned in his stead. Now, King Rehoboam was approached by representatives from the 10 northern tribes. There were 12 tribes of Israel. The 10 northern tribes sent representatives to him and said, we want to work things out. Your dad was too hard on us. And he answered them very, very coarsely. And so it is, he would not work with the people. So let's see what happened to Solomon's estate that he left to his son. 1 Kings 12:19. So Israel, that's referring to the northern kingdom. Israel, the 10 tribes of the north, rebelled against the house of David, which is the 2 southern tribes of Israel, unto this day. There was a split. He lost 10 of the 12 tribes. They went their own way. And Solomon worked so hard. Let's keep reading. And it came to pass, when all Israel heard that Jeroboam was come again, that they sent and called him unto the congregation and made him king over all Israel. 10 of the tribes now have left of the line of David and Solomon. There was none that followed the house of David, but the tribe of Judah only. When Rehoboam was come to Jerusalem, he assembled all the house of Judah with the tribe of Benjamin, 180,000 chosen men, which were warriors to fight against the house of Israel, to bring the kingdom again to Rehoboam. There's already civil war. He worked so hard, and it decays rapidly. Verse 22, but the word of God came unto Shimei, the man of God, saying, speak unto Rehoboam, the son of Solomon, king of Judah, and unto all the house of Judah and Benjamin, and to the remnant of the people, saying, don't go to war. There it is. How quick it'll all be forgotten. Oh, I know what my dad said, this, this, and this. Solomon had a lot to learn. Rehoboam had a lot to learn. And people today still have a lot to learn. Solomon's son inherited his entire estate, and his arrogance split the nation. So it is, Solomon was right. Vanity of vanity, I hate life, because all my labor, because somebody's just going to waste it. The whole point is people work hard, but without God, they're not going to find fulfillment and satisfaction of life. Folks, that's what it's all about. Life is about God. Totally. Solomon, with all his riches, said, it isn't worth it. Have a relationship with God. You will find the true wealth of life. But how many people have to pound their head against the wall and they maybe not even find out until they're dead that it was a waste of time? What's sad is, though, when Solomon is crying out, don't do that. Come here, do this. And they won't listen. I don't want that church stuff. Really? It's the truth of all time. So it is. The unsaved need to first of all find salvation in Jesus Christ, and then all believers need to pursue diligently a relationship with God the Father. That's the only place we're going to have satisfaction. Otherwise, it's all vanity and vexation of spirit.
This is Pastor Rod Holler. I pray you enjoyed that message. Thanks for listening.